Hello and welcome to another episode of Two Woods, Four Quarters, a Harlequins podcast. My name is Will, and as always, I am joined by my cousin Michael. I'm not going to ask how he is this week because we know the answer. We all feel the same way. Thank you for tuning in despite a terrible, terrible weekend. In a nutshell, England lost, Quinn's women lost, and Quinn's men lost. But a good result in the hockey?
No, 2-2 draw.
Oh, you know what? Let's wrap it up there. Thank you so much for listening.
No game for the Ams either?
No game for the Ams this week. No game. Really much to cheer about, but we have got some news to catch up on, which is maybe a little bit more exciting. So we'll kick off there with a little bit of a roundup from the week. First bit of good news. The future Lions captain, Jack Kenningham, has re-signed with Harlequins. A penny for your thoughts, please, Michael.
Yeah, great news. When we see these re-signings come out, especially in the last sort of month or so, you know, when we talk about Danny re-signing, we spoke about Marla re-signing, but this seems a bit different, doesn't it, with Kenningham. Burst onto the scene in our title-winning year, you know, took the place of Will Evans through injury, went from strength to strength to strength, got himself in and around the fringes of an England setup, had a bit of a troublesome sort of last 18 months or so with injury, but Jesus Christ, when he's on the pitch, we're a bit of a different beast, are we? We saw that against Exeter at the big game last week. His line-out work, his breakdown work, his carrying, his game's gone to a different level in the last sort of year or so, even from when we first saw him in sort of 2021, the back end of that season. Yeah, special, special player, going to be around for a long, long time. Hopefully one of these guys, you know, your Rob Shaws, your Danny's, your Marlers, etc., that'll be a one-club man and play for us for a long, long time. Future Lions captain, we've earmarked him, not the next tour, but the tour after. Plays at six, plays at seven. Yeah, world-class news, brilliant player, will be a future superstar, not just of the domestic game, but hopefully in an England shirt as well.
He's a leader already, isn't he? I was watching him against Bristol and he was talking to the ref in a good way, making his point, but also just the way he plays the game is very much in the mould of Rob Shaw. We've said it before and I don't want to bucket him in that Rob Shaw mould too much because he's his own man, he's his own player. But he is a workhorse and he does put his body on the line, and for such a young player to have picked up the injuries he's had, I think is a, in a weird way, a bit of a testament to his tenacity and the way he puts his body on the line for his teammates. So he's the ultimate Harlequin, in my opinion. If you go out on the pitch every week and leave yourself absolutely spent after 80 minutes and put your body on the line and play with your heart on your sleeve, you're the ultimate Harlequin. So I'm a big fan of Jack Kenningham. I'm really pleased he's sticking around for a bit longer. There's also a really nice story of him and my dad in South Africa, actually, where my dad went to watch Quins play the Sharks, and he kind of caught Kenner's eye as he was coming off the pitch after the game, and Kenner's kind of gave him a little clap, and then they bumped into each other in the car park, and Kenningham kind of went out of his way to go up to my dad and just say thanks for coming out and thanks for the support, and you could tell he genuinely meant it. So he's very highly viewed in my dad's eyes, and I know as a player I'm a huge fan of him as well. So he's just got that puppy energy, and I don't mean to patronise him, but that puppy energy, like, it's quite infectious, isn't it? So he's going to be great for us for many, many a year. And as you say, I just can't see him at any other rugby club around the world. So hopefully the exodus of the Premiership doesn't apply here, and he'll be here with us for the remainder of his career.
And a Harlequins fan from day one as well. Exactly. So we keep it in the family.
Exactly. So very, very pleased about that. Some other news, not actually official yet, and to be honest, I think it's all but confirmed, but Jared Evans, Cardiff fly half, looks like he is going to be part of the Wales exodus and make his way over to the TW2. We know Tommy Allen's leaving. We've already got Marcus Smith, who is hugely unavailable at times, and with a World Cup coming up this year, I expect that to be even more so. Will Edwards, very, very good ball in hand, classy sevens player, as we saw at the weekend, just not good enough with his kicking, whether it's out of hand or whether it's off the tee, just not at that standard. And it's going to cost us at times. It didn't cost us this weekend. Obviously, we were just comfortably second best, but it's good to have another international quality fly half in our ranks. What are your thoughts on him? Have you seen much of him?
No, I can honestly say I haven't. I'm a man on the inside. Anything that involves rugby over the Severn Bridge, Dave Rogers, he's been giving us a little bit of intel. Apparently, he fits the Quinsey mould. Throws the ball around, likes to be aggressive, likes to be expansive, plays in the way that might fit our DNA. I can't really say too much more about him than that because I don't know, but it feels a little bit like when we re-signed Tommy, another international quality fly half. He's got a handful of caps of Wales, probably more than a handful, being a little bit not quite too generous there. But yeah, I mean, look, will we see him loads if he's going to play for Wales? I don't know.
Well, he's quite far down the pecking order, isn't he? They've got Dan Biggar, they've got Owen Williams.
Yeah.
Priestland's on his way out, but they've still got some good 10s in their ranks. So, I mean, he's the emerging one. I know he's mid-20s anyway, but...
And all that stuff that's going on in Welsh rugby, you know, with player disputes and contracts, et cetera, et cetera. I'd imagine we're getting him at a fraction of the contract price that we may have done, or may not have done, I should say, a year or so ago, if we were going to sign him then. Yeah, it should be exciting. I'll have to obviously keep an eye out on some of the Cardiff games in the next 3 or 4 months or so to have a little bit more of a well-rounded view. But if you're signing someone that's played international rugby at fly half, and from what we understand, appears to play in the way that we want to play, seems like a good fit.
Well, the Cardiff fans think we've got a real cooper for signing, so that's good enough for me. Let's see how he goes, and hopefully that becomes official in the next few days. The reason I mentioned Will Edwards is kicking is I've heard he's not great off the tee or kicking in open play as well. So interesting to see how that changes things, because I don't know, maybe it's me being a little bit
down and deflated after just watching us get pumped.
Well, no, not even that. I just, something quite unique about a kicking 9 or a kicking 15. I absolutely love that. And I just think that would relieve the pressure on a player like Will Edwards or a signing like Jared Evans, if he's not that good at kicking, from what I've heard. I don't know. We haven't got that kicking 9 or that kicking 15, but that would be a good recruitment at some point, I think. Who knows?
Someone like a Ramos from France, maybe.
I mean, he's never going to leave the top 14 for coins at the moment, is he? So, but yeah, that kind of mould. And they did have Jaminet, didn't they? Who was a kicking 15 too. So maybe it's a French thing. The French love a kicking 9 as well, don't they? The days of Morgan Parra and Dupuy. So maybe that's something we need. Danny Kerr, step up.
Well, want to keep an eye on, I think, in the next 2 or 3 months, maybe keep an eye on some of the scores in the Cardiff games and see how he's tracking.
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
if it is to be official, we don't know yet. We read things, we see things. We'll see.
Moving on, let's move into some Six Nations. And to be honest, I don't want to spend too long here either, but the under-20s took a bit of an L to France, losing 42-7. A couple of our lads running out for them. Not too much to celebrate. Cass Cleaves ended up getting off the bench. But aside from that, a first loss for them in the Six Nations, having previously taken 15 points out of a possible 15. In the men's, a heavy, heavy record defeat at Twickenham, with Marcus Smith at 10 and Alex Dombrand at 8. Jack Walker coming on and playing open side flanker, I think pretty much says all you need to know about the state of the pack by the end of the game. We were mauled and torn apart and out-muscled and soft in comparison to the French. And they played some really nice rugby. I'd love to see Marcus Smith play in that French team, because I think he'd be the best fly half in the world. So it's a shame that it didn't come off the way we wanted it to as England fans, and an even greater shame that our Quins lads weren't able to rip up the script, so to speak, and get a historic and famous win for the Rose. But what were your thoughts?
What are my thoughts? Try and keep this not quite as all doom and gloom as it probably feels like, but tough to watch, wasn't it? I mean, we got absolutely obliterated physically. Line out, we were poor. Breakdown, we got absolutely destroyed. They were, you know, putting us in reverse at scrum time. Donty was getting over the game line with quite a lot of ease. Dupont is just a complete freak. And then they've got some world-class players in the wider channels, you know, Pueno and all those other guys out there. Ramos was superb. Yeah, but it doesn't help when you are literally going reverse. I thought Flamont was unbelievable.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was particularly impressed by their forward pack, to be honest, and the likes of Flamont and Olivon both grabbing a couple of tries each, but their play in the loose, the way they carried, the way they offloaded, it was very Jouet, and I hate to say that because it's very cheesy, obviously, with the pun, but it was very free-flowing, exciting rugby, and I thought their forwards were especially good at that. And again, pick Alex Dombrand up and put him in that blue shirt at number 8. He would be outrageous in that French pack playing the way they play. And Smith would be outrageous at 10. It's just such a shame. But I fear for both of their places, not because they were poor. They were playing in a poor team. Marcus had no hope playing at fly half behind a pack that was going backwards and no front foot ball and just nothing going our way. But I do fear that Steve Borthwick will rip up the script again and just go to tried and tested. You can't have defeats like that and you can't have them and then not change your team. So away at Ireland next week is a terrifying prospect, and I think experience will win in his selection debate in this instance, and we'll see Farrell return. And poor old Alex Dombrandt doesn't play the way he plays for Quinns for England, because we don't play that style of rugby. We don't use him well. We don't have him cutting lines off Marcus. We don't have him in free-flowing rugby, playing in the loose, offloading. We've got him sort of trucking up and playing the Billy Vunipola way, which doesn't suit him. So I fear we might not see him again. And we might see Sam Simmons come in, who plays that way a little bit more, but can also be a little bit dynamic around the park too. So who knows? Who knows what Borthwick's doing? It's disappointing to lose the way we lost. It doesn't seem like a Steve Borthwick kind of side at all. One consolation I will take is he did this in the start of his reign with Leicester. He kind of gave everybody a go, figured out who was right and who wasn't right, nailed down who was, and then started to build a little bit of a dynasty. So maybe we're in that phase now and we'll see what comes of it.
Next week's selection will be really, really interesting, because I don't think going back to the tried and tested is right, because we haven't played that well in the three previous games. Obviously, we got absolutely mauled, you know, on Saturday, but we played relatively the same sides, you know, Ludlam and Dombrandt, Willis, Marrow, Chesham, etc. But I don't know how much you can change. There's obviously that rule about picking people in a certain window and you can't change a squad and all this sort of stuff that goes on. But you've got to change something to try and work things out, especially as a New England coach that's got the last competitive game before the World Cup. Yes, there'll be a couple of warm-ups and this, that and the other, but proper competitive, you know, championship rugby, you have to do something, because you've got to try and work these things out before you get to a World Cup. But I don't know exactly what will happen. I would be surprised if we didn't see George Ford play on the weekend, whether it's at 10 or whether it's at 22. I would be surprised if we didn't see him.
It'd be a bit of a kicking test, wouldn't it? Because Ireland looked terrifying. I'm very, very concerned about how we'll do against Ireland. So to put on George Ford, who can sort of kick well and play a bit of a game of chess with them, as opposed to anything a little bit more risky, I think might be the way we go.
My final point on the England stuff, though, is that, you know, it's probably actually about as excited as I've been to watch a game of English rugby that I wasn't going to Twickenham for in a long, long time, because of Marcus starting at 10 without Farrell at 12. Not because I don't rate Owen Farrell. Owen Farrell has been a world-class player at the top of English rugby for a long, long, long time. But we've worked out that the dynamic between him and Marcus doesn't quite match what either of them wants to do. Farrell wants to play at 10, and Marcus wants to play at 10 with a ball carrier. But I'm going to try and phrase this correctly, but we haven't learnt yet whether that dynamic without Farrell still works with, you know, Lawrence inside him, or if it was Manu, who I think is dead internationally anyway. We haven't learnt that, because they were in reverse for 80 minutes. So if people are going to start writing off Marcus and it's, oh, he can't cut it, blah, 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 it's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. And obviously that comes from a slightly biased Harlequins perspective, but that is a nonsense opinion. And it is, for me, really interesting to see what Steve Borthwick will do next week. And I hope that we go to Dublin and put in something that looks like a valiant performance, whether we lose or whether we win. It will be very interesting. And it will be potentially quite damaging, because I think Ireland is probably still the best side in the tournament, even though, you know, France played incredibly well the other day. Something's got to change. They'll have to try something, and we'll just see what happens. But don't pin it all on the magician at 10. Wasn't his fault.
Ireland going for a grand slam at home. It's just written for them, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is.
And on that note, first game after the Six Nations, Harlequins versus Saracens, Marcus Smith versus Owen Farrell. That is going to be tasty. Alex Dombrandt versus Billy Vunipola. What a matchup that is. And we'll move on to Harlequins. And we keep saying that that's actually a bit of an anomaly of a fixture where we could probably do them at a big fancy stadium like that. However, having watched us this weekend, I'm not sure we could beat anybody at the moment. There's only one side in the league worse than us, and that's Exeter. Come on then, give me a review. Harlequins taking a bit of a pumping away at Bristol. They've done the double over us this season. If you can't beat the teams below you in the league, you probably don't deserve to be in the playoffs. They're at the bottom three sides, Newcastle, Bath and Bristol. We were hoping they were going to be our wins. We've had an emphatic loss in our first one of those three games. Mathematically, playoffs still possible. In terms of what I've seen on the pitch, I haven't got a terrible amount of hope to actually see us over the line. And I was thinking, it's very easy to be negative about it all, and I will be negative about it. But bit of perspective, we haven't got our attack coach, Nick Evans. Our coaching setup is in a little bit of disarray in the fact that Jerry Flannery's got to do both line out and defence. We've signed Danny Wilson as a line-out coach from next season. He's currently at Leicester. Our coaching setup's going to change. There's a lot of kind of baggage, I would say, at the moment. We didn't replace Nick Evans for this window, so everybody's kind of picking up the extra flack. I'm not sure how much we've progressed over the last 12 months, if at all. We're now in the middle of this big English Premiership exodus as everybody seems to be going to France. We're losing Joe Marchant, we're losing Wilco Lowe, we're losing Tommy Allen, we're losing three international stars there, and we're not going to replace them with international stars. So that's not a Harlequins bash. I think that is just a state of play of the league. It's going to be hard to come to terms with it. I don't think we're going to be as good as we are this year, next year, if that makes sense. And that's a little bit concerning when we're currently sat ninth in the table. So there is a whole lot going wrong with English rugby at the moment, and it seems to be reflecting in our club too. Big change is needed.
It's an interesting point you make about us not progressing from last year. And I hadn't really thought about it until you said it. But it's so difficult in this league this year because of the restrictions around players being available internationally, the changing in England setup where players are in, players are out, the salary cap and all that other stuff that goes on with it. It is the tightest league it's ever been. And unfortunately, the magic of January 2021 has transferred into, barring big game or the rearranged big game, has transpired into a pretty dark period for us. Mathematically, we're still in it. And we'll talk about the game a little bit. And actually, we are going to have some good news at the end of the episode because we're going to do a quick review of the state of play event that was on the club on Wednesday night. But I think that's probably our season over. We've still got a European competition to...
I'm all in on Europe now.
Yeah, I know. You said it. But, you know, realistically, what does that bring for us? You know, are we capable of going to the Stormers and beating them? Yes, probably.
Let's get another home game in.
In the bigger picture, maybe that is as important as anything else. Getting another big home game in Europe, filling out the Stoop one more time this season. We've got one game left at the Stoop as it stands. Let's see if we can get another one. I'm struggling to find the positives after today. And I had so much hope going into the game after Exeter. But it feels like that might be the moment our season domestically is probably put to bed. You know, I'm looking at the table now and we are sitting eighth. It's mental. We are literally 8 points off the top four, but it just seems like all that momentum that we might have gathered, and we'd wrestled so hard to gather back after Exeter, you then get put nearly 60 points put on you against, yeah, you know, a Bristol side here in the bottom three. It's difficult, even for two of the most Quins biasy, optimistic, everyone else sucks, yeah, and we're the best fans going. It's difficult to see where our season goes from here.
Well, whilst it's mathematically possible, I'm still going to believe, but that is me being deluded because you can't concede 50 points to Bristol, who are right down the bottom of the league. They're on a bit of a resurgence at the moment, in fairness. They did a job last week. They've done a job this week. They're getting momentum at the right time. We've just not quite got that momentum back after a good start to the season where we sat third for so long, but just a bad season now. Too much has gone wrong too often. We've been scattered everywhere. We've had coaching setups changed. We've had contracts signed and people haven't come in straight away, and I don't know. Everything just seems to be going wrong. And even throughout the game against Bristol, it felt like we just weren't getting any decisions. It felt like the ref, we were on the wrong side of him. Slight knock-ons or slight forward passes. And that obstruction call for one of Thacker's tries that wasn't given. And just little things that all seem to add up. And it's just demoralizing. It's kind of kicking you while you're down. But I'm still going to believe while it's mathematically possible.
Should we talk about the game in a little bit more detail? Because that's what a lot of people will come and try and listen through to me.
I don't think so, to be honest, mate.
Okay.
I would like to talk about players instead, if that's all right. I think I'd like to talk about James Chisholm, who, since returning from injury, has been immense. I think he's been a shining light in the time when we've needed a bit of shining light. He played immensely well against Exeter last week. I thought he had a good game in a bad result for us this week. I think he carried well. He's tenacious. He tackles well. He's always in there, whether it's a scrap. He plays to the edge, doesn't he? Which I quite like. I think we need a bit of fight about us sometimes. And particularly today when they're running in tries straight from the kickoff and you're starting to think this could get ugly, it's nice to see a bit of fight and someone with a little bit of tenacity about them. And I thought he was probably my man of the match from the Quins side. Dino Lamb had a good game as well. He's got some wheels running down that left flank to set up Josh Bassett's try. he's an athlete. He's a specimen. I'd love to see him get a bit angrier and be a little bit more tenacious as well. He's a freak of an athlete. He's getting good in the line out, a little bit more assured. Playing with Steph's only going to help that. He's now starting with Steph as opposed to Ernie starting, which I think is interesting. That's 2 weeks in a row that's happened now. Perhaps we miss a bit of grunt at times with Ernie, a little bit of a fight, a little bit of confrontation. But I'm really enjoying seeing Dino Lamb start to thrive a little bit more, and perhaps a run at six will help with that. Tom Lorde looked a little bit more up for it this week. A few scraps with him, getting stuck in. Not his best game, but nice to see that side to him. And then that man we spoke about at the top of the episode, Jack Kenningham.
Yeah. I think Sam Riley, for me, I thought was good.
Yeah.
I think...
Full of energy.
Yeah, we said before, well, you put a tweet out before, didn't you, saying the two interesting ones for us was Riley starting, I think that's his first start in the league this year. Somebody might correct me, but I'm pretty sure that's the case. And then obviously Will Edwards starting at 10. Bit of a change in mindset, I'd imagine, for Riley having Marla be moved to the bench before the game.
Yeah, shame, isn't it? Because we actually said, didn't we, on WhatsApp and on Twitter, that they couldn't have better people either side of them. When you're Sam Riley with your first start or whatever it is, and you've got Joe Marla on your left and Wilco Lowe on your right, you're pretty safe, aren't you? You're going to do well in the scrum. You just need to play your own game and focus on your darts and carry well and tackle well. I thought he went well. You know, obviously, as you say, change of attitude when Joe Marla drops out and suddenly you've got two kids in the front row. That's always tricky. They're good players, but kids in the front row is never a confidence booster, let's put it that way. As good as Finn Baxter was, I thought Joe Marla came on at the right time. I don't know why he dropped to the bench. Maybe a slight illness, a slight knock, but good to get him on when he came on. And then Will Edwards was the other one. Again, between two brilliant people in Danny Kerr and Andre Estes. I don't know if they looked after him as well as they could have. I'm not sure we saw the best of Will Edwards in terms of game management. You almost needed Danny to step up and control the game a bit better because it's not natural for Will Edwards. It's not something that he dominates and controls in the same way that Marcus does. He's always exciting. Ball in hand, he's flair. He can make a break himself. He's unpredictable and he loves open play, counter-attack. But that control is something that's always been missing, and you'd have looked at someone like a Danny to help with that and Andre to sort of control things and crash it up and set up a bit of phase play when he needs to reassess. But I'm not sure that worked out perfectly. How do you think they went?
Oh, God. I thought Riley was reasonable. I won't say good. Obviously, you know, got the card as well. Wed, this is so tough. I've actually been quite excited about him in the last year or so. And there's been a bit of a sort of thinking in my head of, you know, the way we play sometimes, especially when it's Marcus is out, you know, when Don Brandt wasn't in England set up, but Marcus was, when Walker was around as well. There was an argument for me at times that he maybe should have got a start ahead of Tommy Allen, just because he does play that slightly quicker ball. He goes to the line, he's elusive, he runs well. His kicking is obviously a weakness. He doesn't kick very well from the tee. He missed a shot going to the corner, didn't he, when we were maybe still just about in the game. Probably
so important to get a score before halftime at that point. And it's just a complete momentum shifter.
And I know the game was gone, but then kicks one out on the full with 10 minutes to go. It's little things like that. And it's obviously not a criticism of him. It's just an area of his game where he doesn't quite, you know, excel. And that's not us being too harsh or too niggy or too picky, but that's just sort of, you know, the way we see it. But today was tough, you know. It was so tough. About as tough as it's been watching us this season. We've had some pretty low, moments, you know, Bristol at home, Sale, etc. But that was
London Irish away.
London Irish away, yeah, exactly. But that was difficult. And I think
it was awful. It was so bad. It was so, I've had North such Moore a terrible back. Weekend. Such a terrible weekend. It was deflating watching England get pumped by 50 points. And then we have to do it all over again on Sunday. I was so excited waking up this morning. I was so excited. I was relieved. Thank God I don't have to watch England. Thank God I can watch Quins again. I get to see the boys in quarters, the famous Southwest London jesters. I get to see Harlequins play rugby, the greatest team in England. And we get pumped by 50 again 2 days
running. I even saw you going for a nice little Instagram.
I went for a lovely coffee and a walk this morning. I was having such a wholesome day. I've been really fragile. I didn't get to bed till 3 a.m.
Oh,
if it wasn't Sunday, I'd be out till 3 a.m. again. That was horrendous. Horrendous. So bad. And I mean, we put out a tweet at full time, obviously congratulating Bristol. Fair play to them. They're getting it right now when it matters most. But also, we put out a poll is that our chances of the playoffs over? Are we going to make them or are we not going to make them? Don't know if you've seen it, but it's fairly unanimous. 86% of Harlequins fans who have voted don't think we're going to make the playoffs, whereas 14% do.
And the worst 14%, thing is,
I salute you. I salute the 14%. It's more than a 5% chance we were given of reaching the playoffs, but I salute the 14% that think we will do it. I would like to say I'm in that group. I'm very much on the fence, impartial. I just don't know. While it's mathematically possible, we're Harlequins Rugby Club and we can do anything. But when you see us concede 50 to third bottom, it's very, very unlikely, isn't it? Very unlikely. Anyway.
Well, look. Let's
move on to the future of the club. Something positive. I'm going to hand over to you because I know you've done a little bit of homework. You reviewed the state of play. Finish the episode with some positives for me, mate.
This is an interesting time of the year to be doing something like this when actually, this was out Wednesday night. It was held at the Stoop, open to members, season ticket holders, etc. I couldn't go. I was standing in the rain on a hockey pitch, getting wet and cold. I'd much rather gone down there and listened to it, but unfortunately I couldn't make it. I watched it on the live stream a couple of days after. But yeah, it's an interesting time to do it because both of our sides were down in Bristol this weekend. Both sides still in the hunt for playoffs. Both sides took really disappointing defeats down in the West Country. But an interesting time to do it. But the key things for me, and I'm not going to sort of parrot it all back because obviously if you want to go and watch it, all the information's out there. But a couple of interesting things. We are still the number one for viewership across the league on BT Sport and whenever we're played on TV. The most people in watching rugby on the TV tune in to watch us. That's just a fact. Another interesting thing, maybe a discussion point, the amount of product being sold by Castore is 2 times the amount of previous kit partners.
Really?
Surprised by that?
Who the hell is buying Castore? It's horrendous.
I'm not sure if it's horrendous. That might be a little bit harsh, but someone made a good point in the week to us that they're not just
give
doing
me your
favourite
piece
kit.
Of Castore merch that Quins have.
I thought about to say that I own because I don't.
There you go. Why don't you own any?
Yeah.
I think the away shirt is probably the nicest bit of stash they've done, but aside from that, I'm in a terrible, terrible mood. I apologise if you're listening. I will try and cheer up. I'm in a terrible mood, but great. It's obviously good news that they're selling twice as many units of stash, whatever it is, compared to previous suppliers, but I'm not one of them.
What else is there? Double the amount of partners and sponsors than in season 2021-22. Laurie also made the point that although it is an increase, they're not just partnering with anybody. They take, very serious considerations about who they partner with and who is sponsoring and who's all doing all that stuff,
which is
fantastic.
Yeah, that is really good because they'll help keep the lights on. They'll help do activations that engage fans. They'll be a big part of all of the fun stuff that we do, particularly around big game that's previously gone and big summer kickoff that's still to come. So that's reassuring. That's good.
The financial implications of not delivering Big Game 14 at Christmas were, quote, enormous.
Oh, God. I thought this was going to be positive.
It is. But that was just, something that was pointed out quite heavily by Laurie and Adrian.
I can only imagine. Did they give any numbers?
They might have done. I sort of maybe missed the sort of direct finances of it. But, it is huge that we didn't get that game at Twickenham at Christmas. However, one interesting point on that was that the most viewed game of the season so far on BT Sport was us against Bristol on the 27th. Now, obviously, that you have to take into account that everyone's at home, everyone's at, Christmassy bits, family, etc., etc. But would it have been the same if it was Newcastle and Gloucester? No, it wouldn't have been.
Sorry, was that just on BT Sport? I might have this wrong, but I think Big Game was also going to be shown on ITV, which is maybe where that number has come from.
I think that is also the case, but I think the little stat they flashed up on the PowerPoint on the screen was that it was on the BT viewership. That may have not included ITV, I don't think so. So that's great.
Yeah.
More good news.
Shame we lost
rolling
it.
I know. That was probably where our season sort of fell
apart. Enough of losing to Bristol.
What else have we got? The Barbarians will be back in 2023-24, and it will be a pre-season game included in your season ticket membership.
Great. That is good. I really enjoyed the Barbars game. I'm not sure about it as a pre-season game, but
I actually think this is an interesting point, because if it's against the Barbars, you almost want to see it as a bit of a mid-season fling around. But will we do that in pre-season if we're maybe being sort of one eye focused on a bit more system and shape and all that sort of stuff? Or will Joe Marler still be taking conversions?
Not only that, we'll rotate everybody, won't we? We'll have a load of kids playing to get game time with senior players, and we'll want to manage minutes and ease people back in. You know what, mate? Carry on. I'm just being negative.
Yeah, you really are. London Scottish. Tab, I made
a point. God, not Scottish. Don't start about Scottish. The worst team in the Championship. What are we doing?
Well,
it's Harlequins B. Why are they so bad?
Tab, I'm making the point that it is accelerating the senior academy players and also using it as a valuable tool for players returning from injury. Hint,
you know what? It has been good for Sam Riley. It has been good for Finbacks and Oscar Beard. It's been good for quite a few players when they play for Harlequins, but when they're playing for Scottish, they're playing in a losing side every week.
Scott Steele's played for Scottish this year when I've watched.
Cheers.
Aaron Morris, cheers. Taulani. What else have we got? More good news then. Although we've mentioned, you know, the internationals, the window sort of hampering our season on the men's side, there are international standards players and coaches all over the club. So Nev obviously has got a shot with England this year. There were 12 representatives from various nations at the Women's World Cup across our squad. And obviously that included the influx of the Australians that came at the start of the season, post-World Cup. But having 12 of our squad at a World Cup is special.
Bella McKenzie's been a really good signing, hasn't she?
Really, really good.
She's an unbelievable player. But I quite like how we've gone down the Southern Hemisphere route as well.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And also Emily Chancellor, who was actually at the State of Play event answering some questions.
Yeah.
She scored on the weekend against Bristol. Jade Conkle-Roberts, thick Scottish accent on her. Somebody that I would not fight for love or money.
She's an unbelievable player as well, isn't she? She's a warhorse. She's terrifying. Yeah. She's very, very good at very, very physical. I actually think our women's side has been incredibly unlucky this season as well with injuries. We've not really had a run of games where we've been able to put out a consistent team. It's just been one of those years for the club that we're just getting dealt bad hands out of our control consistently. And I guess to still be in the picture in both setups is good. You'd expect us to be anyway, but given the cards we've been dealt, to still be in the picture is nice that mathematically it's possible for both sides. Unfortunately, that women's result against Bristol at the weekend, it was a fourth spot clash. We were just edged out by Bristol on, unfortunately. Doesn't mean it's not over. There's still games of rugby to be played. Plus, there's the Women's Six Nations coming up. And to have that Southern Hemisphere contingent in our ranks now probably sets us up quite nicely for that period.
Very possibly. But yeah, those were some of the interesting points that the club made on a really positive standpoint. You know, Laurie was not pulling any punches about the economic hits that COVID has still taken on the club. Tightening of salary caps, losing home games against Worcester and Wasps. But this is my overarching thing whenever we mention his name. I would run through walls for Laurie Dalrymple. He speaks so well. He answers every question so straight. There's no political sort of dodging questions and
no beating around the bush. He's very articulate in his answers, isn't he? And you know what? Let's cut a little bit of Laurie Dalrymple into this just to cheer you up a bit and reassure you as Harlequins fans, so you don't have to listen to me being miserable or Michael giving you the updates. Here is Laurie Dalrymple himself from the State of Play event.
And then just a final point, just really in terms of, it's an absolute privilege, genuinely a privilege working for this club and being part of this club. I'm really excited about the year that we've had. I'm really excited about where the club's going to go. Quite evidently, we've got some challenges to overcome that the board are still 100% wholeheartedly committed to supporting the club and seeing us through. And I am convinced that it's together with some difficult challenges and decisions to make, but with the execution of the team that I've just been bigging up, we will get to where we want to be. So thank you again for all your support.
Well, look, now you've heard from Laurie, hopefully this weekend has been somewhat upheaved after quite a difficult time. Do you want to have a quick look to Saracens before we cut it off?
Yes, let's do that. And let's change the mood now. Thank you, Mr. Dalrymple, for making me smile and be happy and love Harlequins all over again. We now look ahead to Saracens on the 25th of March, our next league fixture, post-Six Nations. It's huge. It's a derby. It's at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in front of a mass crowd. I'm going to be there. It's a game I fancy us to really take it to Saracens. Our boys will be itching to get back into the club mix after the Six Nations that we've had little to shout about. our lads are going to be frustrated, disappointed, angry, and itching to get back on the pitch after that loss at Bristol. I'm going into this with hope again. It's mathematically possible. God. It's mathematically possible. We're playing top of the league, our arch rivals. We've all got a point to prove. And it really is win or bust. We said it was win or bust against Bristol. We felt that was more of a psychological win or bust. It now really is mathematically win or bust. And I wouldn't rule us out. I would never write us off. Come on, the Quins. What do you think, Mike? How are you seeing it?
Quite a lot of what happens at Spurs Stadium, I think, would be dependent on who plays against Ireland. If Dom Brand doesn't play, if he gets given not just a week off, I suppose, but if they decide, or Borthwick decides to take him out of the matchday squad altogether, does that mean he'll start for us the weekend after against Saracens?
If I know Alex Dombrandt, and I don't know him personally, but I've had a few chats with him and I've followed his journey as a Quinn, he will be itching to 100%. Put on the quarters, and he will be itching to prove a point against Billy Vunipola and Saracens and make a point to Steve Borthwick, whether he plays against Ireland or not. And I think it will be the same for Marcus Smith.
100%.
Jack Walker will definitely start. He's not played enough rugby. He will definitely 100%. Start, or at least be in the squad, because Sam Riley actually went quite well. And I actually think George Head went quite well before his injury. That stable of hookers is good. There's no real clear standout at the moment apart from Jack Walker. So the rotation there is quite healthy. And Joe Marchant will come straight back in. He's not played enough rugby. He's leaving us at the end of the season. He can rest then. He's coming straight back in.
You've just got to listen to the interview that Marcus gave after big game. I just love playing rugby with my mates. He will be absolutely chomping at the bits to come back and play for us in a big stadium on a fresh patch of grass in North London somewhere. Actually in London, not in bloody Hertfordshire or wherever Saracens play. He will be desperate to play. So, so desperate. You know, that would have hurt him playing on Saturday and losing to France like that on a huge stage. His chance without Farrell and all that stuff that comes with it, he'll be desperate to play, especially if we lose against Ireland at the weekend, which we probably think is going to happen. Walker will definitely come back in. Marchman will definitely come back in. As you say so perfectly, if we know anything about Alex Dombrandt, he will want to be there. Whether he's allowed or whether he's has enforced rest periods or whatever it is, he will want to be there.
You know who else is missing that isn't in the England setup? Will Evans, who we missed dearly against Bristol, particularly at the breakdown where they were just too quick and too sharp, and we needed someone to come in and disrupt and turn them over, and we missed him dearly. He will be itching to get back on that pitch and play for Harlequins. But not only that, he'll be playing against Ben Earl, who will be in a similar position, and that contest is going to be an absolute humdinger.
Not quite sure what's going on with Evans at the minute, because he was on the bench and then got pulled. He was on the bench last week. So if he was on the bench before the start of the game, it doesn't to me suggest an injury. I don't know. Maybe we'll have to do some digging and see what happens, see what the case is. But yeah.
Maybe an illness.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, if he's there.
Also on that note, Joe Marler dropped to the bench. Is that because of an injury, or is that what? I don't get it. Maybe we'll never know.
Maybe one of those things we won't find out. But
no, our back row dynamic's starting to look quite tasty. I think I'd keep James Chisholm in at six. I just think he's been a rock star for us.
He's been playing at seven though, hasn't he?
I know he has, but Will Evans has got to come in. Well, does that mean Jack Kenningham drops to the bench? Who knows?
Chisholm to eight, maybe, if Dombrandt is going to get that enforced rest period. We don't know.
Who knows?
I'm feeling
good about it, which is weird, because they're rock stars at the top of the league that are just absolutely smashing everybody. And we're down in eighth place, can't buy a win.
Nah, Saracens. Like, I'm not having it. We're going to go to Spurs. I'm going to do him. We're going to get the boys back post-international period. It's not over yet. It's not over yet. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't, but it's not over. I'm not saying it's over. It feels like it might be, but I don't care. If we go to Saracens and we do them in a manner that we are capable of, who knows? Who knows? And then we go into Europe, and then you have another little sort of trip to South Africa, and all the boys get a bit of sun, bit of vitamin D, come back. Let's do it.
Let's leave it there. Harlequins until the end. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. It can't have been a comfortable listen. It wasn't a comfortable record, to be honest. But thank you for joining us, as you do every single week. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks after Saracens, and we look forward to reviewing a big thumping win over our London rivals, Hertfordshire rivals, as we preview the running and the race for the playoffs. Is it on here? Is it really on? Thank you.
Thanks, everybody.